Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. We're glad to be here. You are here with Ray Smith and Sandra Johnson and our guest host, John McClain. How you doing, John?
Good. I'm just here for the dance music.
Yeah.
That's good enough for us.
We'd like to tell you who's on the show today. We have Paige Draper, who's the business development, and Rosanna Wahil, who is the escrow officer for Pioneer Title. And later on the show, we're going to have Michael Oakland, who is the inspector for Horizon Inspections. But we have Rosanna and Paige here in the office right now. So how you doing, ladies?
Great. Doing great. Thank you so much for having us. We're excited to be here.
We're happy because these young ladies are part of the title company, Pioneer Title. And we have some bunch of information we thought we'd like to get out to you guys about titling and things like
it's
that.
It's a tough subject.
Yes.
Really. I mean, even for real estate agents, I think title is like the big mystery out there. So we kind of wanted to start with just asking you, what is the role of a title company in the real estate transaction?
I'll try to keep it pretty basic because it can get pretty broad. But at the end of the day, it's just do you have enjoyment of your property without any defects or any issues that are affecting your use of the property? And if the seller can sell it, anything as far as research goes that can take away your access to enjoyment of your property. So that's the basis of title, and title's involvement is researching the property and or the owner of it to make sure that it can be transferred without any defects and things that have happened in the past to that property. That's the basic role.
I totally get that wrong. And then when I'm explaining it, that's not what I tell people at all.
Well, there is title and escrow, and you know, they both go together, different functions, but that's title.
I kind of give you guys credit for being like the one who is the director of the orchestra.
In that way,
because everything goes to you, whether it's the money, the research, everything goes to you. And you guys are kind of working in the background the whole time that transaction is going on.
From the point of being the escrow portion of the transaction, we function, like you said, as a traffic director. So we are the ones that are dealing with the realtors, the buyers and the sellers, because buyers and sellers don't deal with each other personally on a personal level. We're also orchestrating in the lender, the processing team that they have on their end, as well as working with our underwriters from the title department standpoint to ensure that when property is conveyed to the new owner, the conveyance is a good conveyance and that it's going to be free and clear of any liens or defects on the property.
That is so
you get what you pay for. Is that kind of what you're making sure at the end of the day, right? Right.
Preliminary title report. There are portions of it that I think that when people get their title report, they don't know what they're looking for. So when I talked to Rosanna before, I thought we'd go by where I would say, hey, if a buyer is looking at a title report, what are the things they need to be concerned about? What are the most important things you want them to know about?
So on our title report, what the buyer needs to be concerned with is they're going to look at the report and they're going to check to see if their names are listed the way they want to hold title. And something as simple as, does their name have two N's or one N? And also how they want to hold title. If they're holding title with a spouse versus a sibling, how are they going to hold title to that property? They also want to verify that the lender that is referenced on their title report is the correct lender. Reason being is that maybe from the time they signed the contract to the time that we actually generated the report, they might have changed their mind and gone to a different financial institution. And we also confirm the sales price and the loan amount. We want them to make sure that sales price hasn't changed from what they signed. And if it has changed, let us know, because that means that we need to reach out to the appropriate parties, the realtors, to get an addendum.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. Excuse me, everyone. Get my head together again.
You got
okay.
it.
Okay,
you
Paige,
got it.
Yeah, Paige, we talked about that right there. And what you said there was that the buyer has to learn how to take title. But normally they're going to come to you and say, how do I take title? And what did you say when we were talking about this?
So earlier, I mentioned that we cannot advise on how people should take title. You have to refer them for legal advice and possibly tax advice on that. So what we can provide them is a list of various ways that they can take title, right. And there's a description of that. And that is available on our website for anyone to look over. But we still encourage them to seek the appropriate advice before selecting.
Yeah.
You know, last week we had some attorneys on, and they were actually talking about taking title on property. And one of the questions that I had was, when someone purchases that property as an individual, and then they, down the road, a month or two, they want to put that into a trust, do they need to reach out to you?
They need to reach out to a real estate attorney. The reason being is, the only time as an escrow agent that we are allowed to prepare deeds in and out of title is when it pertains to a real estate transaction that we're handling through escrow. Anytime after that, the customer needs to seek the advice of a real estate attorney. Reason being is we don't want them to start adding people's names onto title or taking names off, because we don't want to take names off, because we don't want to negate the kind of policy that they have in place, whether it be their owner's policy or the lender's policy that was issued to their lender. When you start adding people onto title, you could run into various challenges You can run into various challenges, and I'll just leave it like that, because I could go on for an hour
on that. The title.
From past experience. So we can say, what I tell my customers, we recommend that you seek the legal advice of a real estate attorney, and we also have some what we call document preparers. They're paralegals that we can share names of contacts with individuals and say, you know, you can reach out and see if they can provide the service that you're looking to get.
This is really the biggest purchase most people make in their lifetime. And when you're talking about changing the name of the ownership, that's a big thing. And you definitely want to make sure that you're talking to the right professionals.
Mm.
Because when you take title to property, when an individual's name goes, anything good, bad, or indifferent that is attached to that person's name is going to attach to that property. So if you add a sibling on and the sibling doesn't tell you that they have a judgment or a tax lien against them, as soon as they take title with you on your property, that lien or judgment attaches to the property that you own. And now you're going to have a challenge when you try and sell it or refinance, because your sibling's lien or judgment is now affecting the status of title on your property.
Well, that's a sobering thought, isn't it? Always tell the kids to share, but be careful if it's property.
Don't share too much.
That's right.
Wow. When we come back from the break, let's talk about the types of things that might come up in that title search that you're doing, and kind of what might be a red flag or something somebody wants to just further investigate.
And we also want to talk about the fact that what does a seller need to look at when they look at the title report. So I think we'll come back and talk on that, and then we'll go on to the second thing. I think there's a seller out there saying, you forgot about me, what am I supposed to do? So after the break, we'll talk about that. We are headed to the break. We are here with Paige Raper and with Rosanna. She was one of my best buddies. They're from Title Pioneer. Thanks for spending part of your afternoon with us. And you're listening to the I Am Real Estate Show on 1030 KBOI. We are back to the I Am Real Estate Show here with Paige and Rosanna from Pioneer Title. And we're going to continue our conversation talking about the Pioneer Title Agency and the commitment, the title commitment. And I was talking about the seller. So what is the page that the seller might interest them to pay attention to when they get this document?
Well, first and foremost, whether you're a buyer or seller, when you receive the commitment, whether it be by regular mail or by email, open it up, take a look at it. Because so many people are like, you're inundated with all this correspondence coming from different individuals for your transaction. Mm-hmm. And people are like, I don't know. So probably the biggest thing is open up that attachment and take a look at it.
Before you go, when we were at the last one and I went with you, you have a document they have to sign to saying that they read the title report.
Correct.
So make sure, guys, that you read it because you're going to sign that you read it.
They're going to sign that they read it. And there's a difference between, oh, I reviewed the first commitment versus I reviewed the amended commitment, because things happen through the course of your transaction mm-hmm. before you actually close. So we always want to make sure at the closing table that they reviewed the most current report that we've generated.
Okay.
So the most important part of the commitment is the requirement page that's referenced as Schedule B1. That's basically my laundry list of things that I have to address in order for the transaction to close. The requirement page is going to reference if there's any taxes that are due on the property, any homeowners association dues that are on the property. If there was an HOA out there and then it went defunct, the seller has to sign a document that says it's an inactive HOA. Part of our search will also disclose if there's any liens, which I mean by mortgages, on the subject property. So you as a seller may be telling me, well, there's only one mortgage on the property, but when we did the report, we found two mortgages on the property, and that was because the equity line of credit that you had, you paid it off, but the release never was recorded.
Wow.
That could be a water softener, solar, anything like that,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. in addition to HELOC loans, you're going to see the most popular right now are solar mm-hmm. units. And so we have to address those, whether it's going to be that the buyer is going to assume the responsibility of the existing contract, or is it going to be paid off in full? We also address any identity issues. You're going to, this is where we run a search on everyone's name. Wow. And if there's a common name like Joe Smith versus
or a Ray Smith
versus a Raymond Smith
or Sandra Johnson,
you know,
a John McClane.
So we're going to ask you to complete an identity statement. And many times people say, well, that's a lot of personal information. Yes, it is. But what we're trying to determine, we have to show proof that you are not one in the same as that party that's on that lien or judgment. And you know what? It may come out that you are that person. And if we find out that, yes, in fact, you are that person, then we have to address those issues on the title report.
Yeah. Mm. Man, we're looking at this report. It's like 4 pages of stuff, and Rosanna can run them down back and forth. It's really awesome. And the thing is that you have to pay attention to those things, because you're going to be asked when you go sit on that table right across to her. I've seen it. You need to sign it saying that you read the most. And I was scared. I'm like, I'm hoping you've read this.
And the other important detail to pay attention to uh-huh. is the legal description. Many transactions that I close are meets and bounds. It's not in a subdivision where it's lot 54 of Sunset HOA,
yeah.
or, you know. And so you want to make sure that if it in fact is a meets and bounds, or if it is a subdivision, that we are referencing the correct parcel number and the correct lot number and the correct spelling of the subdivision, because it could be Sunset Point versus Sunset Point Roman numeral 2.
Yeah.
So those are little details that might not seem like a lot to the average person, but it can make a difference when it comes to me cleaning up your title report.
And one thing I like to talk to, when we talk to Paige about that, what you guys do is that you guys are solution-based. So even if you have this problem and you have all these issues, you guys come out there immediately and start talking to the client like, hey, I need you to do this. I need you to take care of this. And you're walking them through that process. I've seen you do that. And I want you to expound on how great it is you are with the customer service portion of it.
So there are so many different scenarios in my 30 years of experience that I've come across on a title report that I could write a book.
I can't wait to read that book.
You can be reading that one alone.
Oh, honey, my poor husband. He has to listen to all that. But the point I want to make on that is that I don't have the answers for everything. For example, I have one right now that I'm working, trying to resolve a list pendants issue. And that means that someone went to court and said, I am entitled to an X amount of equity out of this property. The couple is breaking up, and I need to get this resolved. So list pendants happen few and far between, or at least I've not don't have too much experience. So not only do I have my experience to fall back on, but I also have the experience of other senior escrow officers in my branch, or escrow officers that work remotely, or our escrow admin staff that works
statewide.
Okay.
And so if we actually have a division that, an escrow officer whose expertise is in manufactured housing. So when I've had a manufactured house transaction, and again, I don't get them very often, I've reached out to her and said, okay, have I addressed everything that I'm supposed to address? Is there anything that I'm missing? And so that's the beauty of our company. We are located statewide. We have offices in every single county across the state of Arizona. So if I can't answer the question, not only do I have other escrow officers to reach out to, I also have other county title managers to reach out to.
Want to add anything, Paige?
I do also love the fact that because we are an agency, we have access to six different underwriters.
Oh, wow.
So if we have a transaction that is quirky, out of the ordinary, that one underwriter won't insure, Rosanna can evaluate that and get it to another underwriter who is comfortable with that situation. Wow. So we are always looking for a way to navigate these transactions and get them closed for your clients.
One of the things I want to talk about, and it's in every email, it's the signature line, is wire fraud. Do you want to speak a little bit to wire fraud?
In the month of October, was it? We received an email at the beginning of November that said we had had 52 attempts, just our company statewide, 52 attempts of wire fraud.
Wow.
So when we call you and say, we'd like to review the wire instructions you provided to us, we're not doing it to annoy you. We're doing it for your protection, because we want to make sure that what you completed, either at another signing table, or, and when I say another signing table, at another branch office, or a mobile notary went to your house and did your signing, we want to make sure that the information you listed is correct. It could be, I've had it. People have sat there at their closing with a mobile notary, filled it out, and they transposed a number.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're calling and we're making sure one more time that the wire information you provided to us is correct. So we're doing that as a safety precaution for the consumers. We also are required to verify wire instructions on payoff lenders and even buyers, because sometimes buyers get a refund.
How does someone who is interested in titling or trusting things, or even talking a little bit about title, get a hold of you guys?
You can get a hold of me by phone, by email, and through your realtor.
What's a good number to reach you at?
520-344-9930.
We want to thank Rosanna and Paige for being on the show today. We hope they come back again. There's so much more information you can learn about titles. They're going to have so much more information. Hope we have them back again. With that, we'll see you on the other side. We got Michael Oakland from Horizon Inspection coming up next, guys. Welcome back, everyone, to the show. We are here with Michael Oakland, who is the master inspector with Horizon Inspections. How you doing today, Mike?
Doing all right.
We have some really good stuff we want to talk about, mainly about new construction, and we'll start with...
Hey, we're starting with Sandra.
Yeah. Wait. I'm pretty sure her name is Sandra. let's just throw this out.
Every time I hear that master inspector title, I'm just like, oh, I need a title like that.
But yeah. Master host.
Master Jedi. Right? We'll just say Master Jedi.
Master Jedi. There you go.
Jiu-Jitsu Jedi.
There you go. I try.
Well, this last year has been... last few years have been absolutely crazy for new home construction.
These are true words.
We went into offices with contracts where you purchased something, and then when it came to building the house, that feature that you wanted, whatever that was, wasn't available. And so there's been a lot of craziness, and I know a lot of it had to do with COVID, had to do with supply chain issues. But at the end of the day, the consumer is the one who I feel like needs to be considering right now that new construction home inspection.
Yep.
So most of the time you're looking at doing that as either a pre-drywall before they buy the house, but a lot of people forego that initial inspection. So what I wanted to talk to you today about is doing that at maybe 9 months, 10 months, 11 months before that first year is up, having that homeowner take a really good look at the product that they received.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Very good. Especially since most builders are going to provide a warranty and it'll typically last a year. So if you can catch defects that could be potentially very expensive and have those taken care of at the builder's expense, then the cost of a home inspection is pretty modest anyway, but it's easily justifiable when the builder's going to be paying the bill for some of these defects that were not done well.
Yeah, as a listing agent, on the listing agent side of things, nothing is more frustrating to a buyer than to sell a home that they purchased brand new and they're doing a repair that they should never have had to do if they had just known that that defect was there.
And it's extremely common for buyers who are buying a brand new home to just make the assumption that everything's fine. It's brand new.
It's been inspected by the city, right? That's one of the things that you hear a lot is that, there are some inspectors been here and signed off on the house, so my house is actually fine. I shouldn't need a home inspection. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about the types of things that you see, even with new construction. And when I talked to Michael, I told him we're not bashing home builders.
Yes,
I'm not talking like that at all.
Totally agree.
But there are
I'm not
things,
interested in bad-mouthing any particular builders. I have some nicknames for some, but that stays in my own head, my own heart.
And you'll share those with me later.
Yeah. Right? Okay. You'll have to armbar me first, but then I'll let it out.
Right. Well, a lot of this is
because you're better than me. Jiu-jitsu thing.
A lot of this wasn't in their control.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
you're
true.
Talking, you've got subcontractors that are on properties and people that, you know, they were under timelines and dealing with like I said, supply chain issues. Mm-hmm. And this really wasn't that the builders had control of all aspects of that build.
So true.
So talk to us about the kinds of things that that you would expect to see.
Some of the things that I've been seeing pretty regularly, just off the top of my head, I've seen brand new tile roofs that have missing flashing, particularly at the ridges where the bird block is just not there. And so wind and wind-driven rain is just going to get right in there. It's going to get right in behind the upper tile where the apron flashing connects with the first course. You could have major water damage, accelerated aging, roof leaks that won't show up for months.
Wow. So I was going to say, in a case like that where we're talking about flashing, how long could that go before a homeowner would actually see the evidence on the inside of the home?
It could easily be a year.
Yeah.
It could easily be longer than the warranty period because it takes time for the water to work past the wood, past the underlayment, get passed into the find weaknesses. Water's always going to win the war. Mm. If you're going to bet on the house versus water, water's always going to win.
Water wins.
Yeah.
So you got water. That's why we have building standards and practices where you're having like redundancies and multiple layers of protection, flashing, and then you've got counter flashing. And so if you have some of those components missing, again, and it's the hardest job. But like any home inspector out listening to this is going to probably say a big shout amen to this. The hardest part of our job is to see something that isn't there. So something that's overlooked or missing, it's like, wait a second, where's the bonding strap between the power conduit at the main coming into the main case? There should be a little bonding jumper there. It's easy to miss things like that. Or I've seen homes with completely like backwards wiring on the entire living room. All the wiring is completely reverse polarity. I've inspected a bathroom with a GFCI was installed wrong where the line load is reversed. So the outlet would work, but the GFI safety isn't going to work. And so the electrician was in the room with me when I found this defect. And he's like, oh, and he starts to drop a swear or two. And literally starts to do the revert, you know, fix it right there with live wires. He's like, he's blaming his assistant, you know. But then again, I've also heard from an authority that I have to keep their, I don't know if they would give me permission to say this. So I'll leave their name out of it. but someone who works
Man,
for
you're just leaving out all the good today, man. Well, goodness, that's the only reason we brought you here.
I don't want to be guilty of calumny. Yeah. There's a $10 word for the day, calumniation.
Yeah. I was hoping you'd have one today. There you Thank go. You.
So, yeah. so the idea is that there's a lot of the code inspectors in our area are overworked. They're understaffed, and they have people who are doing full code inspections who are only specialized in one field.
Mm.
They're specialized in the electrical field, or they're specialized in a plumbing or a framing field. And they're doing the entire inspection when they're not really trained for all of it, but they have no choice but to do the whole thing. So it's very possible for a code inspector to miss things during the municipal walkthrough that we as general home inspectors might notice.
Yeah, and the thing you've already said, though, it's not malice. It's a matter of everyone's trying to do the best they can with the ability, with the talents they have.
Yeah.
And if we thought that we're all perfect, then we wouldn't have inspectors. So we've got to realize that.
Yeah, our industry would not exist if human beings could catch it right every time.
Yeah, so we need everybody to understand that perfection is not the key. The key is to sit there and help people where we can so that they're not paying a lot for something that could have been caught just by having that inspection, having someone who's a master inspector who's on your behalf inspecting the house.
Yeah, and sometimes catching a defect early is the best way to prevent a massive expense down the road.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, we're here with my Michael Oakland, who is the inspector for Horizon Inspections. And I got one more thing we want to talk about. Here's from me and Sandra. If you're looking to buy or sell a home or have any questions concerning real estate, we would love to help. Please call the Johnson Smith team at 520-850-1725 or 520-904-7711. We'll be back with more of Michael Oakland after the break.
That's a good ring to it. Johnson Smith team. I like that.
We are back again here. You are listening to the I Am Real Estate Show with Sandra Ray and John. Our guest is Mike Oakland from Horizon Inspection.
And we've been talking about new construction and the importance of having new construction inspected, especially before that 1 year warranty is up. So, Michael, you were talking a little bit about, it's funny because you mentioned roof flashing.
Yeah.
And when I said there's nothing more frustrating to a seller than to have to replace something that should have been covered under that warranty, they just didn't know.
Right.
I was thinking of someone who was replacing roof flashings. So, that's not a cheap thing to do.
No. Roofs are more than $1.50, I can tell you that.
And most of us don't climb on a ladder.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't climb on a ladder and look at our roof, especially those tile roofs. I mean, a flat roof, I could see somebody's up there maintaining it. But when it comes to a tile roof, I just don't think your average person ought to be up on a ladder.
No, they really shouldn't. And honestly, most builders in the Tucson area are not going to allow a home inspector to walk on the roof when it's still in escrow. So if they do an inspection on the front end before they close on the transaction brand new, it's often going to be a visual inspection from a ladder or a drone, or just from what you can see, and you know, you're not typically not allowed to walk it.
Well, you're gonna void a warranty.
Yeah, you can either void a warranty, or or just the seller will just eat your lunch and pop the sack, and it'll be a bad day for you.
When people eat my lunch and pop the sack.
When you're doing these post inspections for the new constructions, and you're doing them in a 9 month period, it's the same as a regular home inspection that you do for our same house and stuff, same things, and you provide them the same book and things like that you did before?
Same process as we do for anyone else. It's just that the home is younger and it's likely to have different kinds of defects.
Okay.
I don't know why, but somehow when people install electrical panels today, very rarely do they actually label all the circuits. It's very common, at least, maybe it's certain builders, but I'll just see a giant bracketed label and it'll just say general lights and receptacles. Not allowed. How in the world am I supposed to know what circuit those are? If you have to go do servicing on something, or if there's an unsafe condition, or there's sparks flying out of one of your outlets in a hallway, how do you know which circuit it is?
Okay.
Right. So that's one of those things where it's a standard, but it's just very loosely enforced.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That's an important thing to have those circuit breakers labeled.
Yeah, they should be specifically and individually labeled permanently, not in pencil.
Okay.
So the construction pencil doesn't count. Uh-huh. It needs to be clearly labeled, and it shouldn't be overly specific. Not like Susie's room, or like reading room, or painting room. I mean, if it changes hands, it might be used for completely different purpose. So it needs to be descriptive, permanently labeled, and clear.
Okay.
So very common defect.
I know that when you're inspecting, you also are using infrared.
Yes.
Are you seeing a lot of issues with new construction where maybe houses are not insulated fully?
I wouldn't say a lot. I see it enough that it bothers me, that it makes me glad to have the tool to see. Mm-hmm. I have seen an entire, in fact, the most recent inspection I did, I saw a third of the ceiling had no insulation at all. Mm. It's like it just got missed.
Wow.
And the infrared could see it. And I mean, I could just show the infrared picture to the client and they're like, whoa, what's going on there? It's like, yeah, there's no insulation in the attic above the ceiling here. Not a stitch of it. So that's something that you would never see with a naked mm-hmm. eye. And mm-hmm. since there's no accessible attic in that structure, there's no way you would know that. Mm. So in that case, it was the only way to know that there was a massive section of missing insulation.
I'm just going to go
it's
with
not as common.
If we happen to catch one of our Tucson snowstorms and one section of the house looks, the roof looks different than the other two thirds, then maybe we have a problem there, but you probably don't want to wait that long to find out.
No.
Another thing. Yeah. Once every 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before that. Another thing that you do is that you do a report on all the appliances. But that's still, that include also, even though everything's new?
Yeah. I still will double check the make model serial numbers.
Okay.
That gets run, I guess, against a recall database. So I've seen some new construction where the appliances are like 6 years old. They probably have been sitting in a warehouse. They're still, quote unquote, brand new.
Right.
I mean, they still have the plastic and the foam insulation. But they might have been sitting in a warehouse for 5 or 6 years. Sometimes that's a weird surprise. He was like, oh, look at that.
Are they still under warranty if they sat in a warehouse for 6 years?
Mm.
And that's an important thing about having that post-inspection prior to that 1 year. Say, hey, this is not under warranty like it was when I thought I got it brand new. So it's good to have that in your report stating things like that. That's things we don't look at.
I don't actually investigate manufacturers' individual warranties to see if it's still, the warranty's still present.
Okay.
But I can tell you, most of the time, as long as the data plate's accessible and legible, I can tell you almost to the month when it was manufactured.
So when you're using the infrared, not only are you going to see the missing insulation, what other things are you going to pick up on?
I'll use it at the electrical panel. I'm looking for anomalies. I've seen really hot connections at a wall. So say some homes have aluminum wiring. The aluminum wiring itself isn't the problem. It's the connections at the walls and switches and outlets that can be the problem.
Hmm.
Well, when I see 140 degrees at the wall surface, looking at the outlet from just with an infrared camera like 3 feet away, that's a really hot outlet. At the surface, it's even hotter than that behind the wall. So very likely we're getting close. This is a sign that we have a loose connection that's arcing, which could lead to an electrical fire. So infrared can help you see hot spots at electrical panel, at outlets and switches. Yeah, you can see even moisture in a wall or ceiling. I've seen leaks at the ceiling between first and second floor.
Mm.
You'll see a cold spot. And you're like, oh. There's a bathroom above us, I betcha. And then you're looking, there's a shower pan right above that cold spot. I wonder what's happening. It must be a leak.
Mm-hmm. I love it when you do your inspections. And after the inspection, you take the time to explain your report to the client. So before you leave, you want to make sure, here's the thing that I found, here's what I found, here's what you're going to see in the report. And if you have any questions, come back to me.
Yeah, that's really important. Again, I've said this before and it's worth repeating. Leaving a home inspection site with questions is like leaving a restaurant hungry. You don't ever want to do that. You want to make sure you have all your questions answered. Any concerns that you have, tug on your inspector's ear, ask him a question. I specifically tell my clients, you can ask me a question anytime during this process. It is not an interruption.
Okay.
I used to say, feel free to interrupt. People don't want to do that. I specifically say, it's not an interruption. I can memorize up to 20 different bookmarks throughout the house effortlessly without having to lose track of where I was.
You got such a big brain.
Well, no, it's a memory trick I can teach you later. Yeah. It's pretty fun. But I'll just put a mental bookmark where I happen to be. It's a little memory trick that I do. And then I can do that up to 20 times, maybe 25 times on a good day, and get right back to where I was.
That's an amazing skill. I wish I had that. So you might
honestly, I can literally teach anybody.
Okay. Well, you might have to do that.
Next show, that's what we're going to do, a whole segment on that memory trick.
No, memory trick.
So, so here's what I'll do for you, John. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. So I'll have you write down 20 random objects from whatever room we're sitting in. I'll memorize them as fast as you can write them down, and I'll give them to you backwards.
Okay.
Okay, I'll that's a party order. Trick is what that nice. Is.
That's cool. That's, yeah, you're
but anybody can do it. Now, if you know how to do the trick, it's like coin magic or card tricks. Anybody can do it. Anybody's brain is wired this way. Nice.
Okay, well, let's back on the subject of inspection.
Well, people know what to expect with Horizon Inspection.
That's right. This is full service.
This is how
right
I remember
here.
The history of GFI and how I remember the history of AFI and how I remember all kinds of stuff from the code books. I'm not a code inspector, not a licensed code inspector, but if you have a good brain to remember details, it makes your job easier.
Mm. Yeah. What would someone expect to pay for that inspection? And is that going to just be based on the square footage then of the house?
Yeah, it is going to be based on the square footage of the house. Typically, it's around 350-ish. And if they call based on the KVI radio, if they remind me through text, email, phone, or whatever, just say KVOI, referencing this show, we got $25 off just because. Ooh. I love you guys.
Oh, thank nice. You so much.
That's so sweet.
I got this thing here. I got this note, and I have to ask you. Sorry about that. Is your pre-inspection, they say they want to do a pre-drywall inspection. Is that the same thing as a post-inspection, or are you doing something different?
It's different. What you're looking for different things. You're looking for like missing like nail plates that might be on a wall stud. You're looking for you're looking for framing anomalies. You're looking for, you know, wiring. How high is it? Do we have enough of them? Do we have an adequate number of electrical outlets in a particular room, for example? Okay. Or like there's a 2-4 rule in the kitchen. They need to be with, you know, so I don't want to get too deep in the weeds about what that means.
Yeah.
But there's things that you can see, like where is the ducting for the HVAC system? Mm-hmm. How high is the wiring? Where are they running it? How deep is the wiring? If it's too shallow in the stud, is it protected properly with a metal plate? Once the drywall goes up, you can't see any of those things.
And do you do another inspection after that when all the furniture, not furniture, all the appliances and stuff in there?
Ideally, I actually prefer to do the inspection on new construction before, like in the finished product.
Okay.
Right before closing.
Okay.
Appliances in, finishes done, et cetera.
So we see a lot of times in the resale of a home, two things I think are on almost every single inspection would be that the dishwasher drain line is not looped.
Yeah.
And that there's no anti-tip bracket on the stove.
Yeah.
Is that true with new construction as well?
I literally have opened up the warming drawer on the oven and it's still in the drawer. And the site manager is like, yeah, we never installed those. I'm like, you do realize this has been required since 96. And he's like, yeah, we no one cares. We just don't.
But
like,
I tell people, remember, if that's installed, you know how you want to take out your oven and clean it? You can. You have to tip it and take that thing off, right, to pull it out?
Well, no, you can actually just slide it straight out. It's actually designed to prevent it from tipping up.
Okay.
So, yeah, a buddy of mine in a jiu-jitsu class had a nasty scar on his head from literally trying to climb on an oven and the boiling water hit his head.
Well, he's an idiot. Huh.
Well, he was a big Samoan idiot, but he was... It was a pretty cool scar, honestly. Yeah. It was kind of dope. Looked like a video game character with like that perfect scar in his head.
Okay, so you guys, we got to wrap this up. You've got a $25 discount if they mention KVOI.
Yep. Mention KVOI. People. Just let them know that that Ray and Sandra hooked you up.
How to get hold of you?
My number, direct number, is area code 520-330-9703. You can text me at that number.
All right. Well, we appreciate you being here today. Mm-hmm. We also would like to thank our sponsors, Horizon Inspections, Indy Realty, Inspired Life Mortgage, Rego Pest Prevention, Atomic Nutrition, and Sweet Little Chefs.
Thanks for coming to the show, Mike. Really appreciate seeing you again, buddy.
You bet, man.
You're the man.
You guys are the best. Love you guys.